for those of you who may not be aware, but this is a book we're working on in conjunction with the Gospel of John. This is Joel's book, Realization of Oneness, and the selections that you're about to hear are all from the fifth chapter, which is Resting in Oneness. I think we'll finish it today, so next week we'll be doing chapter 6, and we'll be beginning John chapter 12. So some of you have written and requested a response on your letters about the meaning of Lazarus' resurrection to you. Those who have requested a response may have noticed that they have already received one spiritually. There will be a letter in the mail to them probably this week, though, as well. And Joel tells us that there are no material laws. And I guess he could have fooled everybody in this country and everybody in the world with that statement. There are no material laws. We thought there were material laws. Hardly anybody we know thinks there are no material laws. But here for 25 years, roughly, this mystic has been saying there are no material laws. 25 years has been saying there's only the power of God. There's no other power. And while he's been saying that, mankind and many who have read his words are suffering from every power on this earth. Now, Christ Jesus was saying there's only one power. His way was to demonstrate it. Visibly. And because he worked in a very small area, and he had witnesses there, the world discovered, but didn't understand, that there are no material laws. You bring up somebody suffering from a material law to the Christ, and the Christ says, "Open your eyes. Lazarus, come forth. Stretch out your arm." Breaking the false concept of a material law. Joel, working in a larger area than the little Holy Land, demonstrated there are no material laws to those who were able to follow his demonstrations. And you have demonstrated many times in your life that there are no material laws, although you may not have realized it. When a material law caused a problem, and you, either through your own efforts or the help of a friend or a practitioner, were able to set aside that material law, you were demonstrating that there is no material law. But after the demonstration that a material law can be set aside, if we stop there without accepting that this is a permanent truth. The power of that material law which was set aside was not a power. It was a world supposition. It was a condition in the carnal mind, in the world mind. That's all it was. And we accepted it, and we suffered from the acceptance, and then someone somewhere broke that world mind mesmerism and showed it wasn't a power in their case. That was the resounding statement that it is no power at all if you are able to stand in the consciousness of the presence of God. You discover that these material powers, which are powers to man, are not present as real powers, they're present as suggestions. And you have the absolute right to stand in the presence of God realized to discover the non-reality of these powers. There cannot be another power than the power of God. God is not a power of evil, so who creates the evil? That which is non-created appears to be a power. And who accepts it? The mind of the creature accepts it. And so the non-mind accepts the non-power and suffers for it. Now then, when Joel says the following, you have only one enemy, and it is not the carnal mind. You're ready for a big surprise. It is not the carnal mind. That is not your enemy. But your enemy is the belief that carnal mind is power. Now that's a very difficult statement to untangle. Your error is not the carnal mind, but the belief that carnal mind is power. Now what is he saying, really? If the carnal mind isn't power, why? It's because it isn't there. That which presents a picture to you of evil is the carnal mind. And that which presents a picture, which is the carnal mind, which presents a picture of evil, is a non-mind, a non-existence. And that which it presents is equally non-existent. There is no carnal mind to present such a picture, and the picture is being presented by nothing. It cannot exist, neither the picture nor that which projects the picture, nor that which receives and accepts the picture. All are non-existent. Why? Because only God is. And if you start picking out this little picture here isn't true, and that one isn't true, you'll be doing that forever. You've got to see that the whole world picture is the carnal mind picture. Not the good of it, not the bad of it, the all of it. The carnal mind picture called the world is not your Father's kingdom. And your belief that what is being presented to you is real is your only enemy. Now, how are you going to agree with that adversary if you can't first accept that the carnal mind picture of this world is unreal? If you can't accept that or work with it to the point of accepting, you're going to be presented with all kinds of pictures, all kinds of sensations. And you're going to think that Mrs. Flanagan's little child has the measles or scarlet fever or the strep throat, and you're going to want to do something about it. That which is presented to you in this world is not God's creation. It is being presented to you by a world mind which is not God's creation. And as long as you are trying to meet it with truth, with words, with mind, you know you're going to be tricked. You'll catch even five of them and lose to five of them. You'll be drawn in. And so, what can you do about it? You step out of you. You step out of your sense mind. You step out of the sense mind and its projection, which is you. That's your rebirth, isn't it? The stepping out of you is the way you step out of the carnal mind and its presentation of this world. And so even if we were to read and to understand Joel's statement, we would not be able to be activated in the direction that the statement should lead us. You have only one enemy. It is not the carnal mind. It is the belief that carnal mind is power. When you have overcome the belief that carnal mind is power, then for you it is finished, as far as you are concerned. when you have overcome the belief that carnal mind is power, for you it is finished. Then you do not have to demonstrate health, happiness, supply, or companionship. You demonstrate only the realized presence of God. All that you need is God's grace realized, and it fulfills itself in all things. All right? You demonstrate only the realized presence of God. What does that mean? It means that you must be the realized presence of God. Someone else isn't going to do it for you. There are plenty of mornings when you don't feel like the realized presence of God. But that's the only thing that's going to break carnal mind. The realized presence of God is yourself. It isn't your talking about God. It's yourself. It isn't your human self, is it? It isn't your human form. It isn't your human mind. How then will you demonstrate the realized presence of God if you remain in a human form and a human mind? These words will just go in one ear and out the other. You, in your Christ self, are the realized presence of God. In your Christ self, the carnal mind does not hypnotize. And whatever it presents does not influence you to accept, to react, to fight, to object. In your Christ self, you stand King of the Kingdom, Prince of Peace, liberated from the need to retaliate, to wage battle, to take arms. You can neither insult nor be insulted. You can neither hate nor be hated. Why? You're out of the concept self. You're you. And there's no other self that you can be which is free except the you that is the divine image and likeness of God. Back to Lazarus. Into the tomb walks that form which was born in a mother's womb. Out of the tomb walks that form which was not born in a mother's womb. Jesus on earth is that form which was born in a mother's womb until the descent of the dove, and you see that form which is not born in a mother's womb. You appear on earth in a form born in a mother's womb. You must come into the realization of that form which is not born in a mother's womb. What is this saying? A new species of man. It's talking about the divine image in Genesis, realized. The divine image and likeness realized as my present self. That's the new species of man, the only man there ever was, the divine self. And it alone is free of the carnal mind projections. Unless you're it, you'll be battling error as long as you walk this earth. No matter how much truth you learn, you'll be battling error until you are that divine self realized. That is the meaning of you must demonstrate the realized presence of God where you are as yourself. When Joel says then there are no material laws, you cannot demonstrate the truth of that. He could. But you can when you will accept yourself as he did to be the living child of God. Then you will see there are no material laws. There are no laws that are binding on the Son of God. But if you're not the Son of God, these material laws to you have a reality that compels you to bend to them. And so, always, Joel's statements are forcing upon us the realization that the truth of them can can only be realized when we come into self-awareness as the living Son of God. Now, you know the mortal creature born in the mother's womb is not the Son of God. You know the mortal creature that lays down its form is not the Son of God. And yet you're told here by Joel, there is no law binding on the Son of God. What value is that to you if you're not the Son of God? There's only one law, says Joel, and it is spiritual. Even legal laws cannot bind anyone in the presence of spiritual grace. The only law is the law of spirit. The very moment spirit touches even a person in prison, the penalty of violating the legal law drops away, and the prisoner is free. Thy sins be scarlet. The moment you touch the Spirit of God in you, you're free. Free of material law, regardless of its nature. A spiritual being cannot be held in any kind of prison. When a man has been touched by the Spirit, he has died to his humanhood, has been reborn of the Spirit. And how can such a one be held in prison? And you know now that prison means many things. The prison of lack, the prison of limitation, the prison of fear, the prison of the past. How can anyone be held in those prisons when the Spirit of God is the living now, without past, without evil, without blemish? The moment the Spirit of God, accepted as your very self, is realized, you have no past. You are the eternal self, without beginning or end. And there are no material laws. Yesterday's law has no effect in the eternal now of spirit. We saw Peter come out of prison. We saw the chains just parted on his wrists. We saw the miracles of Paul going right into Rome to teach the truth of Christ under their very noses. These men were not Jesus Christ. And yet, look what they did. They had risen to the point where for them there was no material law. They had found the spiritual kingdom on earth within themselves as the very Spirit of God itself. They were sons of God. Before they learned that they were sons of God, before they demonstrated that they were sons of God, even while they were stumbling, trying to find the way, even while they were in error, they were sons of God but didn't know it. It was only when they learned that they were that the power flowed, but always they were the sons of God. You never become it. You learn that you are it. And as the conviction takes root, you refuse to be something else. So that the moment you say, well, if I'm the Son of God, why shall I be a dying creature? I can't be. How can the Son of God be a dying creature? Who is this creature who will lay down the form? Something enables you to step out of that concept into the land of truth where there is no material law, where all is governed under divine love, on the place whereon thou stand. This sounds mundane, but it continues Joel's thought. Always remember this. You are not suffering from rheumatism. You're not suffering from a cold, a headache, or unemployment. You are not. You are suffering from the universal acceptance that the carnal mind is a power. The carnal mind presenting to you a condition is universally accepted to be a truth, and you are accepting that carnal mind's projection to you. It says, you are this, you are that, you are the other. It says, everything except you are the Son of God. And you say, that's right, I'm unemployed, I'm lacking, I'm limited. And because it didn't tell you you're the Son of God, you just let it go by, and you're not the Son of God as far as you're concerned. The idea never enters your mind, because it's not in the carnal mind to begin with. And then the false power, the belief that the carnal mind's projection to you is the truth, this is what you suffer from. And the suffering is in the carnal mind in you. It seems to be a state of your selfhood. But you've got the wrong self there. Christ is not unemployed. Christ is not limited or lacking. The Son of God is none of these things. You're simply not being the right self. And so you'll go out to get rid of the problem of the lack or limitation or unemployment and keep the false self. Whereas the solution being given to us here is get rid of the false self, and with it go all of its problems, because there are no material laws to the Son of God. And God is abundance. God is self-fulfillment. Always, the higher level then of this teaching is, still on the human sense of things, get out of the human you, which suffers from the human problem, or the human problems. Get out of the self that is not you. Don't bother to correct the errors of that self, but get out of the self which contains the errors. Spiritual identity, Son of God, understood, practiced, realized, accepted, is not ignoring God, but accepting God's presence where you are. And then, don't be surprised if the condition disappears. But it won't disappear as a permanent dispensation while you are still Johnny Smith, the physical man born of Mary Smith, my mother. You've got to be spirit, never born, never dying, realize, and until you know what that is and experience that, expect the form to be sick, unemployed, limited, lacking, all of the ups and downs of the carnal mind. Because those powers of carnal mind will always function on a human being. The Christ teaching is not about human beings. It's about the Christ. Speaking of accepting the carnal mind as a power, Joel says, consciously or unconsciously, you have accepted two powers, the power of God and the power of error, which is called carnal mind. And to nullify error in your experience, see through the belief that the carnal mind is power. And if we're doing anything, it's this, to emphasize that you cannot see through that belief as a human being. Everyone who's tried it has failed. The only way you'll see through that belief is to know yourself. Only yourself, Christ, will see through that belief. Again, Joel, you have only one devil to overcome, not rheumatism, cancer, consumption, immorality, poverty, alcoholism, drugs, or unemployment. Do not pray for these things. If business is not good, do not pray for good business. Realize instead that the carnal mind, that's the world mind, and its suggestions are not power. There's no power to keep you from having good business, good health, good this or good that. You may accept a false power and think it's happening, but there's no power to cause it. because God is the only cause. There's only one demonstration for you to make, and that is the consciousness of the presence of God. For in its presence, the carnal mind dissolves. Now then, how do you demonstrate the consciousness of the presence of God? By reading a book? By making statements? Or by day in and day out practicing that the presence of God is where you stand? The pure, invisible, spiritual self of you is the presence of God. Everything we're directed to do comes down to demonstrating the presence of God, and the only presence of the God there is the invisible self of every man who walks the earth. All your memorized prayers can be thrown out the window. They haven't done it, and they won't. It must be the living presence of God in your consciousness that dissolves all illusion. Oh, Joel's getting very interesting here. He says, suppose you became convinced this instant that God is the only power. I mean, he says convinced. Not that you believe, but convinced this instant that God is the only power. Suppose you really reached that conviction. An unshakable conviction. There's no power but God. Right here. Then he adds, what would trouble you? Nothing. A circus of wild lions could be turned loose in this room. You wouldn't get up to move out of the way. What difference would it make if there's only one power? And that power is God. If bombs were falling right and left, what difference would it make to you if there's only one power? And if there's only one power, what can bombs do, or wild lions, or germs, or weather, or climate, or anything? If the power is God, it's the power of ever-present perfection. And so, to know that the power of God is ever-present and is the only power in your mind is a start. But now, the presence of God, being the spirit of your being, that acceptance dwelt on, lived in, achieved, becomes an automatic knowledge that the only power here can be the power of the Spirit of God, which I am. Resting in oneness. Suppose it took you another year to do this. Suppose you could even be assured that it would only take a year. Is there anything worth more than the attainment of that knowledge? That the power of God is the very power of my spiritual self, and that when I'm in my spiritual self, that power functions under grace. I don't have to turn it on or off. I don't have to ask it for anything. I don't have to direct it. I don't have to tell it what's wrong. I have to be me. And it, by grace, must function. Joel have arrived at the same Lazarus idea. And here it is. He said something about it was spring, and he was feeling renewal and rebirth and resurrection in the air, and so he wanted to say something. How they may be experienced. And here's what he said. There is one necessary step without which we cannot die out of the old man, meaning out of the sense of self which entertains all these problems, and be reborn into the new man, the risen man. Write this on your forehead, he says, where you will see it every time you go to the mirror. God does not care how much of a sinner you are or how pure you may be. God has no interest in your humanhood, whether you're a saint or sinner, well or sick, rich or poor. Turn away from your present state of human consciousness. Focus your attention on the recognition of the spiritual nature of individual being. The spiritual nature of individual being. That means not the material nature of individual being. The senses say material, material, material. But focus your attention on the spiritual nature of individual being. Forget my humanhood, he says. Behold the Christ of me. And then the Christ of you will rise. When you forgive, release others from the penalty of their sins. And your penalty will dissolve. Do not wait to become good before seeking God, because you will not find him. It's not easy to acknowledge your own Christhood, of course, because you know your own human failings so well. And therefore, recognize the Christ of those you meet. Cease seeing me or any person on earth and meet yourself as the Christ man. Now that's a beautiful thought. He was saying, don't see me as Joel. And when you see me as Christ, realize that you are seeing the Christ of you when you look at me. Isn't that a beautiful thought? See the Christ of yourself in every man. If you're like me, you'll say, I decided to do that 5 years ago. Whatever got me off the track? I know that's what I wanted to do. I know what got me off the track, a human mind. The human mind wants to do it on Tuesday. The human mind forgets. The human mind is distracted. The human mind knows that there's going to be a football game on Sunday. The human mind has a lot of things it wants to do, and it has no capacity to see the Christ in another individual. You don't see the Christ with your human mind. In fact, by seeing the Christ, you get out of the human mind, because the human mind has not the faculty to discern the Christ. Something else in you does this. And as you discern the Christ in everyone you see, who's doing it? It's the Christ in you doing it. The Christ mind in you discerns the Christ. And so you're working it from both ways. You're accepting I, Christ, am, and thou, Christ, art. You're looking out at the form, but accepting the invisible Christ, and the Christ is you, in you is beginning to rise. And that's why Joel makes that suggestion. Cease seeing me or any person as a man of earth. Meet yourself as the Christ man in everyone you see. Release everyone from his past. Come face to face with your now. Again, a very advanced statement. You're looking at someone and saying, I know about his past, but he has no past. That's the Christ. And the Christ is now. Come face to face with your now, instead of the past of an individual, which was nothing but a human judgment. Erase yesterday. Christ is now, everywhere around you, in the midst of you, in the midst of everyone you're looking at, not under penalties of material law. Not subject to the powers of sickness and death that have no existence in Christ realization. Not going to war, not hating, not being persecuted. Christ is none of these. Is Christ persecuted? Is Christ persecuting? No. Where is it happening? In the carnal mind. Where is the carnal mind? It isn't. There is only the mind of God. We have no need to suffer from non-existence. As we re-enter the manger of consciousness to be reborn as Christ's self, be assured, you attain freedom only as you free others. You attain justice only as you are just. You attain abundance only as you give. As you recognize the Christ in every man, you open the door of your consciousness and admit the Spirit of God. Then Christ lives your life, free of material laws. Resting in the Christ everywhere is resting in oneness, for the Christ is one with the Father. Now, isn't that past just knowing truth? You see, it's the habits that you set up. The instant reflex of the senses throws all this out the window. And so you have to readjust those reflexes. You have to consciously not make contact with your environment through senses, but consciously make contact with the invisible environment through the Christ. You don't do that accidentally. You do that through concentrated desire to love God supremely, to be yourself, to take all of this great world message that has been set into the consciousness of man by the Christ, and to fall prostrate before it, to throw yourself at its feet and say, "Thank you for giving me the key to the kingdom," to unlock the prison of the mind. And you turn from that mind, and you live. Evil can only persecute your false sense of self. Every error that attacks you is attacking only your false sense of self. Error never attracts the reality of you. It never attacks who you are. It attacks who you are not. Give it some thought. Every time you feel harassed, try to remember that evil is attacking that which you are not. Nothing attacks Christ. It can't even find Christ. Shuffle off the false sense and watch the evil go with it. I don't know if we can continue. I'd like to, but let's see what we have here. Well, we'll sum it up this way from Joel. From morning to night, your stand must be, there is one power. And I, says Joel, do not say this lightly. I'm aware of all the appearances there are in the world and the claims of power that exist. But if you're going to live the spiritual life, you must come to the point where Adam and Eve were before they had eaten of the fruit of knowledge of good and evil. You must come to the point where you don't believe there's good matter and bad matter. As long as you've got good matter but no bad matter, you're not very far along. When you know that there are not two powers, a spiritual power and a material power, that's the point. There is no material power in the consciousness of spirit that is demonstrated. Then you're back in the Garden of Eden. Now let's not talk anymore about omnipotence and then say, oh, I have a headache. Omnipotence, but I've got a backache. Omnipotence, but my business went down last month. Now you know. Twist it around. My business went down last month because I wasn't aware of omnipotence. I have a headache because I wasn't aware of omnipotence. In fact, the only reason I'm going to ever die is because I'm not aware of omnipotence. And there is no power other than the power of life. And so if I can live in the conscious awareness of omnipotence, I will experience its power. And if I try to do that as a human being, I will fail. I must do it as that spirit, which is the child of God, because omnipotence is your assurance that only the child of God could ever have been brought into existence. Omnipotence would not permit that which is unlike God to exist. Omnipotence is that total. It could never permit that which is not the perfection of God. And so when you have omnipotence, you know that you must be that perfection which is the Son of God. Again, not that you are going to become an omnipotent self. The omnipotence of God is such that it never stopped being omnipotent. It always has been. It always will be. It is always maintaining its perfection in all things. And that of you, therefore, which experiences limitations of any kind, is not a real self. Don't patch it up. The omnipotence of the Father is your assurance that where you are is the perfect child of God now. That omnipotence never stopped maintaining the perfection of its being where you are. You don't have to remove any patches or place any patches on the child of God. You have to simply know the child of God that I am is always in the bosom of the Father. Joel suggested in this chapter that we work with meditations on omnipresence, omniscience, and omnipotence. And we'll close today with some kind of a contemplative meditation on any one of these three, just so you can get the swing again of never letting a day go by without putting one or the other or both together in your consciousness. Omnipresence, so easy. They call that a baby, they call that a mother. She's having a child. It's stillborn. Now where's omnipresence? That's the denial of omnipresence. Can a mother have a stillborn child in the presence of omnipresence? No. But omnipresence is there. What is happening? Is there a stillborn child? Is there a mother? No. There is only the Spirit of God there. That's the meaning of omnipresence, and you cannot push it aside and pretend it means something else. It means that the presence of God is there, and it is not a stillborn baby. It is not a mother losing a child. But it is there. Omnipresence means no other presence. Omnipresence where you are means no other presence than the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God is not having babies. The Spirit of God is not going to war. The Spirit of God is in the kingdom of God. It is not in this world. Omnipresence means the omnipresence of the kingdom of God. Flesh and blood does not live in it. You do not live in the world, you live in the kingdom of God, and you come in with your shoes off. You come in the knowledge that the flesh and blood that I am in this world is the sense denial of the omnipresence of God. I cannot have both His omnipresence and my physical self. To practice omnipresence, you must practice the nothingness of all human selfhood. Don't try to squeeze omnipresence into a human mind and a human body. You see, it's just another way of telling you the humanhood is not here. So when you contemplate omnipresence, don't be afraid to follow the truth to its absolute true conclusion. That's the purpose of the contemplation. If God is the only presence on this earth, then there are no powers of war, there's no power of dying, there's no power of hate. If these things exist, then omnipresence to you has no meaning. Now work with that. You'll find that every time you're trying to help somebody, if you fall into the trap of thinking there's a person there, you're denying Joel's statement which says, I have never seen a patient. I don't even know there's such a thing as a patient. I know that only God is there. Omnipresence. Do it where you are, and you'll find you have the key. Where you are is the presence of God. Then you'll be able to accept that the presence of God is where everyone is, and you won't be worrying about the appearances. The power of that presence will manifest. I just have to tell you this before we disband. The presence of God has never left you. It has never left any individual who has walked the earth. When the form dies, the presence of God remains exactly where it was. When the form dies, the life that is there, which is the divine life, doesn't go anywhere. It simply doesn't go away. And if you, in a great moment of insight, discover that you can commune with the life of any individual on this earth right where you are, any individual who has ever walked the earth, and any individual who ever will walk the earth, you will be in the truth. It won't be an untruth. Where you are right now is the invisible presence of everyone who ever was. That life is the infinite expression of God, and it has always been present. If you're advanced enough to commune with it or to try, you will find something unknown to the human mind. Repeat that. When the form leaves, the life remains. The spiritual life is always present right where it always was. It never goes anywhere. You can prove it to yourself, and it will be one of your joyous secrets. If you succeed, you will know that you have found your own invisible spiritual life. Because this communion does not take place between person and life. It's only life and life. realizing itself. Next week, chapter 6, Realization of Oneness. Chapter 12, Our Friend John. And to all of you, much love, many blessings. Thank you. Thank you.